Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. After 3 years of serving in the United States Army, Ricky Clausing, and after serving 6 months in Iraq, felt there were abuses of power and injustices that made it clear to him that he could no longer support the organization that was in Iraq in the name of the American people. My name is Nina LaBoy, and I am from the American Friends Service Committee, a Quaker organization founded in 1917 to support conscientious objectors, and now serves the world in doing social justice and peace work and humanitarian aid. I'm very proud to be standing up here with Ricky, his family, and our Veterans for Peace. Before we speak with Ricky and his family, there will be several speakers from Veterans for Peace representatives who will be speaking. The first will be Kelly Daugherty, co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
As well as being co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War, I am also the chair of our Colorado Springs chapter. And every day, I think more and more U.S. service members are actively refusing to participate in the illegal, immoral invasion and occupation of Iraq. And I think every time that a soldier, sailor, or Marine does this, they give courage and hope to other people in the service who are having questions and wondering what they should do when they don't want to redeploy or deploy to Iraq. One of our members in the Colorado Springs chapter, Mark Wilkerson, is also getting ready to turn himself in, and he has prepared a statement as he's not able to be here today, and I'd like to read it. Brothers and sisters, some of you I've had the opportunity to meet, some of you I've not yet had the pleasure, though hopefully someday I will. My name is Mark Wilkerson, and I'm 22 years old. I was in Iraq from March 2003 to March 2004. I applied for conscientious objector immediately after returning, and eventually it was denied. I wrote a rebuttal, but was told I would have to deploy to Iraq and it would be considered after I returned. So I made the decision, like a lot of soldiers have done lately, to go AWOL. For a year and a half, I worked and I did what I could for the peace movement. But now the time has come for me to turn myself in and live with my decision. I'm not sure of the outcome of this chapter of my life, but I look forward to moving ahead and eventually putting this experience behind me and learning from it. I'm through running. I would like to ask for your support and say that we're all on the same team, and eventually we'll face roadblocks on our personal journey. But with your support, I can do that. Don't give up the good fight. Iraq Veterans' goals against the war's goals can be met if we all work together. Good luck to all of you. In peace, Mark Wilkerson, Iraq Veteran Against the War.
Camilo Mejia is a prisoner of conscience, war resister, and conscientious objector who refused to go back to Iraq. He served 9 months in military jail and is a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War and Veterans for Peace.
Thank you. Like Kelly was reading about Mark, and like Ricky, I myself spent some time in Iraq as well. Place I went to opposed to the war politically, where basically seeing the horror of war turned me into a conscientious objector, not just on a political level, but a more personal and moral level. So I can relate to Ricky 100%. I know what he's been through. It's a very, very difficult decision to make, perhaps the most difficult decision he's made in his life, besides deciding not to go back to Iraq, where I'm sure he has many friends. It's a difficult choice that we have to live with, but we also have to understand that this is something that we must do for something bigger than ourselves, for the people of Iraq, for our brothers and sisters who don't have the courage to come forward, and for humanity, basically, because we find ourselves in a time where the rule of law is coming under attack by the United States government and by the status quo over the world. And we have to stand up against that. I speak here not only for myself, but also on behalf of my brothers and sisters of Iraq Veterans Against the War. As we stand against the war, we also stand behind those who resist it. And I could not be happier to have all these people here supporting Ricky. I know that he's facing a tough road ahead, but having been to prison myself for doing exactly what he's doing right now, I can tell you that he will be a free man even if he goes to jail. Freedom. Freedom is not a physical state, but a state of the mind and of the heart. And there's no greater freedom than the freedom to do what our conscience tells us to do. Thank you, Ricky. We salute you.
Hart Vigis is an Iraq war vet. He spent a year in Iraq and has spoken out against the war since returning.
Hello, thank you all for coming out and listening to what we have to say and taking notice of what we are doing. I myself am a conscious objector. You know, I joined because of September 11th. I went over there thinking there was some enemy. Find out that, you know, if you listen to what Jesus said and love your enemy, then you don't have any. And I made that change in my heart, fought for conscientious objection, and got out honorably. But I played the game. For some reason, I consider myself one of the lucky ones. You know, I can't really say why they, you know, didn't lose my paperwork a million times. They did a couple of times, but not too much, where it stopped me from doing what I had to do. And when you find that clarity in yourself and you know justice and you know peace and or at least the ideal of it and you work towards it, you know, the goal becomes the process. And this is what we're in right now. And no matter how hard it is that our decisions seem to, you know, be, the road is very clear for us. And it doesn't matter what, you know, adversity we face, whether jail time or being called traitor or coward or whatever have you, we're going to move on, and we're not stopping. Thank you.
Michael Wong was in the Army during the Vietnam era. When he received orders to deploy, he went AWOL, and then eventually left for Canada in 1969. He returned to the United States in 1975. He is featured in the film, Sir, No Sir.
Thank you. Briefly, my story is that I got Vietnam orders. I was in the U.S. Army for a year, got Vietnam orders. Went AWOL for 2 weeks, turned myself into the Presidio Stockade, refused orders. They had 3 felony charges against me, total 15 years. They decided to drop the charges, release me from the stockade, put me back on Vietnam orders. I escaped, made it to Canada, was there for 5 years, came back, turned myself in again, pleaded guilty to long-term AWOL, got an undesirable discharge, became a social worker, got my master's in social work, and more or less lived happily ever after. Thank you. It takes courage to go into battle. It also takes courage to refuse to go into battle. And the Army feeds you this line that if you try to resist orders, if you try to refuse, if you don't play the game, that your life will be ruined, you'll be branded a coward, you'll be destroyed, you know, your life will be ruined forever and ever. That turns out to be false. When they had the West Coast premiere of Sir, No Sir, I was standing on at the end of a long line of people on the stage who were featured in the movie. And as I looked down the line, I realized that everybody there had made it. We all had good jobs, we had good careers. About 80% of us had at least a bachelor's degree, and about a third of us had a master's degree. A lot of us were professionals. Those who were not professionals had made it in some other way, in a trade or something, but they were all doing well. This from a group of guys and women who started out in life either wanted by the FBI on the run or in prison, and yet all of us made it. So the lie... And not only that, all of us were dedicated to political activism, to the highest ideas, to service to our country, to service to the community, to service to the world. So Ricky here is making a decision to oppose the most powerful military that has ever existed in the face of on the face of the world. And not only is he making the decision to face the most powerful military force in the world, he is starting a lifetime of commitment to service, to community, to nation, and to world. Yes. And he will be successful in the end, just as we were successful. Oh. Thank you.
Judy Lenihan is a member of Military Families Speak Out. Her son is an Iraq War vet and was deployed from Fort Lewis.
I am here this morning to stand in support of Sergeant Clausing. As a member of Military Family Speak Out, I am one of over 3,000 members across this land who are breaking the code of silence and telling the boots on the ground stories in Iraq. We know these stories all too well. It is our loved ones who have been or are in Iraq right now. My son deployed in November of 2003. The week before he was to return home, he sent me an email and he gave me his assessment of what the situation was right then. He said he couldn't get the image of Sisyphus out of his mind. He said the difference in the image was that the hill just kept getting steeper. Indeed, that was October 2004. And we know today the attacks on our American soldiers have just been increasing, on our Americans, on the Iraqis, on British soldiers. Even as our commander-in-chief and generals tell us that we're about to turn another corner. Well, the simple truth is, we keep turning these corners, and what it is a downward spiral. The military occupation of Iraq is unraveling at warp speed. These soldiers behind me, these resistors that are coming forward with enormous, enormous courage, are our leaders. It's not our generals who are talking to the press. It's these fine young men and women. Many fine and honorable and extremely courageous, legions actually, of soldiers have left our military bases around the country to head to wars over the past 4 years in Afghan and Iraq. I know this because my son was one of these soldiers. I know this because I know these Iraq veterans against the war behind me. But there is something breathtaking about the soul searching and courage that it takes to arrive at the decision to lead us, to be a beacon of hope in the world, to hasten the day when our troops can come home. So I say to Sergeant Clausing, to Lieutenant Watada, to Suzanne Swift, to Kevin Benderman, to Camilo Mejia, thank you. And troops home now!
Ricky Clausing, served 4 months in Iraq as an interrogator and will turn himself over to the military custody after being absent for over a year.
Before I speak, I'd actually like to introduce you to a close friend of mine who I met in the interrogation school early on in my training, who I'm just now reunited with for the first time back at this demonstration right now. And he also resisted to participate in this war. And I'd just like to introduce you to Joshua Castile.
In May of 2005, I was discharged as a conscientious objector after serving 8 months at Abu Ghraib as an interrogator and an Arabic linguist. And Ricky and I go back to the interrogator school and to the language school at the Presidio of Monterey. In the interrogator school, they don't tell you things that you end up learning in combat. They don't tell you that sometimes you or your comrades are going to be told to strip a man naked, pour cold water over him, and place him in front of an air conditioning unit because you're trying to induce hypothermia. They don't tell you that you're going to be told to use the blunt edge of an axe to soften a guy up before interrogations. They don't tell you that Donald Rumsfeld is going to go before the Senate Armed Services Committee and tell the world that we don't use dogs 4 days after you've been ordered to use them. Ricky is an example of courage under fire. He's an example of moral fiber in the midst of virtuous shepherds leading a country to despair, to war, to savagery. Before Monsignor Oscar Romero was assassinated by thugs trained at Fort Benning, he gave a homily which said, "No soldier is obliged to follow a law contradictory to the law of God. I plead you, I urge you, I command you, stop the repression. It falls upon the shoulders of soldiers and everyday citizens to resist." This was the clarion call to the Irish who faced occupation under the British. It's the clarion call to the Palestinians facing occupation in Gaza and the West Bank. It's the clarion call of every single individual on the planet when faced with orders, with urgings, with laws that are contrary to human rights, to the law of conscience, to the law of God, to the law of love. And I stand by Ricky and the rest of my comrades from this war, from Vietnam, from every war, who are standing up in the midst of this insanity and saying, no more. We have a different path to take, and it doesn't matter what they do to us. It doesn't matter if they take away our honorable discharge, if they put us in prison. Camilo said it perfectly when he said that Ricky will not lose his freedom, even if he's punished, if he's put into prison. Because freedom isn't something that's given to you from people of authority. And war is not fought by or for ideas. It's fought by individual persons who possess human will. Liberty and democracy weren't exactly to the forefront of my mind when I was first told to lock and load my M16. Every single person faces a moment of conscience where they have to decide, what am I going to do next? And Ricky has decided to draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not moving past it. And Ricky's voice today and his actions later are a symbol of unity that exists outside of the media spectrum, that exists outside of official pronouncements on Capitol Hill, in London, in Paris, in Washington, D.C. It happens in the hearts and souls of individual people who have the courage to say no. Thank you.
First, to my family, friends, brothers and sisters of the religious community, members of the press, and fellow citizens of this nation that we are grateful to call home. I want to thank you today for coming out to support me before I surrender myself to military custody.
Thank you.
My name is Ricky Clousing. I'm a sergeant in the United States Army, and I served for 3 years and have been absent from my unit for the last year. Like many in uniform today, I enlisted after the events of September 11th, wanting to defend the freedoms and the privileges that we enjoy here. After 18 months of my necessary training as an interrogator, I was stationed in the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. As the invasion of Iraq unfolded, I was confused behind the premise of such an attack. But in November of 2004, I deployed to Iraq in support of the first stage of elections to be held. In Iraq, I operated as an interrogator assigned to a tactical infantry unit. As an interrogator, I spoke to Iraqis each day, and this gave me an idea of what civilians thought of U.S. troops in their country. Throughout my training, very appropriate guidelines were set for the treatment of prisoners. However, I witnessed our baseless incarceration of innocent civilians for a prolonged amount of times. I saw civilians physically harassed. I saw an innocent Iraqi killed before me by U.S. troops. I saw firsthand the abuse of power that goes without accountability. Being attached to a tactical infantry unit, I was exposed to the brutalities of war. And through that, I began to reconsider and doubt my beliefs. I thought about these experiences and what they meant each day I was deployed until I returned home to Fort Bragg in April 2005. Upon my return to the United States, I started to ask the same questions to my unit that I had begun asking myself. Wearing the uniform demands subordination to your superiors and the orders passed down. But what if those orders violate morality, ethics, and even legality? If these orders come unquestioned down my chain of command, does that make me exempt from reevaluating them? My convictions spiritually and politically began to call in my question my ability to perform daily functions as a soldier each day. I finally concluded after much consideration I could not train or be trained under a false pretense of fighting for freedom. Under the recommendation of my unit, I sought counsel for military chaplains and counselors, and as my feelings crystallized, I realized that I could not perform the duties expected of me. After months of questioning, I began to consider the possibility of leaving. Each day I felt haunted by my conscience, which told me that my association in uniform at this time was wrong, and that my affiliation directly or indirectly supporting this organization at this time was violating my beliefs and my morality. I stand before you today about to surrender myself to military custody, which was always my intention. I don't know what to expect or the course of my future. We as Americans have found ourselves in a pivotal era where we have traded humanity for patriotism.
Amen. Yeah. Yeah.
We have traded our civil liberties for a sense of security. I stand before you today sharing the same idea as Henry David Thoreau, that as a soldier, as an American, and as a human being, we must not lend ourselves to that same evil which we condemn.
Ladies and gentlemen, please let me remind you that this is a press conference. I will be the moderator, and I ask that if you have any questions, we will take questions for about 10 minutes. Please identify yourself and what media you are from. Thank you. Any questions?
As I mentioned, I witnessed the abuse of power that goes without accountability. I witnessed this abuse of power on a number of occasions. I clarified that I've seen an innocent Iraqi civilian killed. I also saw the physical, psychological, and emotional harassment of civilians. I was with soldiers in convoys when the drivers of Humvees would smash into civilian vehicles on the highway for no reason, and even roll down the window and bash out windows. Also, one of the soldiers in the turret on a convoy as well opened up fire on a civilian's livestock and thought it was humorous and laughed about it. The emotional harassment that involves, as I mentioned, the incarceration with no basis, which in turn these men and women, generally men, and even boys, are incarcerated with no legal basis, with no criminal evidence, and also not able to contact their families, which I witnessed as an interrogator in the interrogation facilities. Four brothers at one time, ages ranging from 12 years old to 22 years old, 24, who were detained with no evidence, no grounds for, no circumstances of capture that would warrant that type of action, and were kept for longer than the authorized 72 hours. They actually stayed at our facility for approximately 3 to 4 weeks, and their parents had no idea where they were, if they were killed by U.S. troops, kidnapped, blown up by an IED. And some might view these incidences as isolated incidences, which are commonly referred to on the news. A lot of times, the only events in Iraq that make the media are significant events such as Haditha, the raping of the 14-year-old girl that's been on the news, the incidences in Abu Ghraib. But my incidences that I witnessed is basically the larger picture of the daily devastation of occupation. And there are daily incidences where innocent Iraqis are being killed, and this is not reported by the media because it's not significant enough. So those are just a couple of the incidences that I witnessed that influenced my decision. I was stationed in Baghdad and also Mosul. I was basically in a convoy en route to a location. Another convoy that was in the city was struck by an IED, so my convoy dismounted to provide assistance. I was in the rear of the convoy and was ordered to get out and pull rear security. Upon pulling rear security behind the Humvee to ensure that no other cars pulled down our avenue, a vehicle approached with a young man inside going approximately 15 miles an hour. And as the vehicle turned down the road, he was obviously scared, terrified that he saw U.S. troops with weapons drawn. And as he was put his hands off the steering wheel and was turning the car around, braking, a soldier behind me in the turret of the Humvee opened up fire on the vehicle, and without following the procedures or the rules of engagement, and giving no warning sign, giving no warning shot, not trying to disengage the vehicle, but firing directly into the vehicle at the civilian that posed no threat to us, and he unfortunately did not survive. I did support that to my superiors. I was scared to at first because I had not been deployed before with a bunch of veterans that I was with, and because I was not an infantry soldier, and I felt it was my responsibility to report it. And when I talked to the platoon leader and the platoon sergeant, and I basically advised them, because I was lower ranking than them, that they needed to tell their soldiers to analyze and assess the situation properly and take the proper steps into defusing a situation like that. They basically jumped on my back and basically told me that I did not have any idea how convoy operations worked. I did not know the realities of war, and that this kind of thing happens, basically.
What do you think is going to happen as you serve your soldiers?
That basically is dependent upon the military and how they decide to respond to my action today and my decision to leave. So it's, I'm prepared for whatever consequence comes. I made the decision to leave, and I knew that there were certain ramifications that could happen to me, and I feel at peace about that decision then when I left, and I feel peace about it today as I deal with this situation.